What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Tune in to Awakened Wellness with Mylène Riobé, MD, and join the conversation about how to heal our broken system to reverse our current health crisis. The entire world is looking for answers, and the truth is hidden in plain sight. Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness. Every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. with live shows on the first and third mornings when you can call in and ask the questions that matter most to you.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening to Awakened Wellness with Mylène Riobé, MD. I'm your host, Dr. Mylène. And today, we're going to be exploring the extraordinary egg controversy. Another egg study has been released, is as confusing as ever. And so we'll begin to explore, like, why are we always getting these conflicting studies from our conventional medical model studies? They told us to eat eggs, then they told us not to eat eggs. And then they told us to eat eggs again, and now they're telling us not to eat eggs again. And so how are we supposed to parse through all this data to figure out what we can eat here in the United States? And just as I was preparing for this show, an aspirin study came out yesterday. And so if we have time left today, we'll go ahead and discuss the aspirin controversy as well. And what I think the common thread will be is that unfortunately, here in the U.S. and in our conventional medical model, we tend to alter things. We tend to not keep them in their natural states, and then we begin to scratch our heads and wonder why people get sick and people die when we do this. And hopefully, at some point, we'll begin to see the common threads, look at them more critically, so that we can provide important and useful information to our clients, to our population at large, to our children. You know, what do we tell our kids to eat? Do we tell them to eat eggs or do we tell them not to eat eggs? Well, today we're going to figure this out. I'm going to help you parse through all of this confusing information so that you can begin to take a critical look at the information that you're given through the news, through medical studies even, so that you can be a little less confused by the end of today's show. So today we'll be debunking myths, learning about cutting-edge research, corroborating ancient medical systems, and exploring the mind-body-spirit approaches that keep you and your family vibrant, healthy, and happy, regardless of what you hear on the news. So I'd like to stress that what I'll be discussing on our show doesn't constitute medical advice because I'm not specifically evaluating and treating any particular person or condition on the show. My patients who come to see me at the Riobé Institute are fully and properly evaluated before I formulate a treatment plan to share with them. So I also advise you to seek the care of a board-certified integrative medical doctor to see which of the areas I'll be sharing throughout the show may benefit you. I'm blessed and I'm honored to be with you here today on Dream Vision 7 Radio. We're live today, March 19th, 2019. We're live every first and third Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. with our pre-recorded shows on the second and fourth Tuesday mornings at 11. You can also hear our pre-recorded shows every Tuesday night at 11 p.m. right here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. During our live shows, I encourage you to call with your questions at area code 833-220-1200. Again, that's 833-220-1200. I'd love to hear from you, questions and comments. I know, unfortunately, our news can be extremely confusing. I'd like to do my best to answer any questions you may have today. So please feel free to give us a call. So this week, the Journal of the American Medical Association published a study on eggs. And after having removed the ban on eggs, they put it back up after this particular study. And if you look at the study superficially, it sounds very convincing. Basically, what they found is the consumption of 300 milligrams of cholesterol or more per day increases the risk of cardiovascular disease by 17%. What they found is consumption of 300 milligrams or more of cholesterol per day increases your risk of all-cause death by 18%. All-cause death means death for any particular reason, whether it be a car accident to a heart attack. So if you consume more than 2 eggs per day, you have a 17% higher risk of developing heart disease, according to this study, and you have an 18% risk of dying for any particular reason, or increased risk, I should say. So let's look at the study a little bit more carefully, right? So again, if you read the comments on the study, this says that it's very convincing, and what they did was that they controlled for diet. In other words, everybody had the same exact diet, and the only thing that differed was how many eggs they ate. Unfortunately, when you actually look at the study, this was not, in fact, the case. What they did was they took several thousand patients. There are almost 20,000 patients in this study, so it's a large study. I'm sorry, 30,000 patients. So it was a very large study. And what they did was they followed these people for up to 31 years. So they took six different studies, pooled all the data into one study. Up to 30,000 patients were followed for up to 31 years. So on its face, it sounds, again, very convincing. But unfortunately, here's where they went wrong. So what they did was they took these patients and they asked them to recall what they ate for the previous month or even year. And then they started to follow them for 31 years with the assumption that their diet would not change for the next 30 years. Now, I don't know about you, but I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning, and it's only 11 a.m. And so imagine if someone came to me and asked me to remember what I had eaten for the entire previous month or perhaps year. We can all assume that we would pretty much be making things up, right? We would give a general indication of what we tend to eat. It certainly would not have any precision associated with it. And so this is the data that they took from people, and then they watched them for 31 years, never again asking them what they ate. And then they looked to see if these people had heart disease or heart attacks or died in the next 30 years. So when we really look at this study, we can see just how flawed it actually is. First of all, recall is very, very problematic. If they wanted to study this properly, perhaps what they should have done is had these people collect diet logs as they moved forward through the study. In other words, every time you eat something, you write down what you ate. And then you follow these people for 30-some-odd years, having them send in, week after week, their diet logs. But that's not what they did. They simply asked them to recall. What did you eat last year? What did you eat last month? And they took notes, and then they followed them, never again asking them any dietary questions. So that's a problem. I don't recall how many eggs per day I had over the past year or month. Now, I can tell you that generally I tend to eat 3 egg whites and 1 egg most mornings. But that doesn't mean that's what I've done, and it doesn't mean that I haven't had other sources of cholesterol or fat in my diet. It doesn't mean that I haven't eaten a bunch of sugar. It doesn't mean that I haven't eaten other foods that may be contributing to my risk of heart disease. So I have a real problem with the study, as I do most studies done by the conventional medical model. It's just not a good way to study things. So let's put this into a little bit of perspective. So what we know about the United States population is that 11% of us have some form of cardiovascular disease. So this study tells us that we're going to have a 17% higher risk if we consume 300 milligrams of cholesterol or more per day. So that's basically 2 eggs or more per day. If we look at our population, somewhere between 20% of us and 74% of us have what's called small bowel bacterial overgrowth. And I've done a podcast about this before in my podcast called Gut Check. I think this is way more important than eggs. Small bowel bacterial overgrowth or small intestine bacterial overgrowth is a very, very serious infection of the small bowel, which goes unrecognized by the conventional medical model, but is essentially an epidemic throughout the United States. So if you eat 2 or more eggs per day, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, you have a 17% higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease. According to the Cleveland Clinic, if you have a small bowel bacterial overgrowth, you have an astounding 80%, that's 80% increased risk of cardiovascular disease. So what's more important, worrying about whether or not you have a small bowel infection or worrying about how many eggs you eat per day? So 17% versus 80%. So are we focused in the right place here? I don't think so. So if you ask most conventional medical doctors, they do not believe in small bowel infections. But the Cleveland Clinic does, as does Johns Hopkins University, probably the premier medical institution in the United States. In 2014, they conducted a study on SIBO, or small bowel infection, and they noted that herbal therapies were actually better than antibiotics for its treatment. So they very much believe in SIBO, and they're studying it, as is the Cleveland Clinic. So is there a link between SIBO and egg consumption? Can we figure out why eggs might be a little bit dangerous to some people and not to others? So Cleveland Clinic concluded that they think that the risk of cardiovascular disease might be associated with the digestion of choline, which is an amino acid. Choline is basically brain food. It's extremely important as it converts to acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter that keeps our brains and nervous system functioning. So when you have a small bowel infection, you cannot process choline appropriately, and it gets converted to a substance called trimethylalanine, or TMA, which gets further converted to trimethylalanine N oxide, or TMAO, in the liver. This is strongly correlated with atherosclerosis, or cardiovascular disease, basically. Eggs are a very rich source of choline. Choline is found in egg yolks. And so if you happen to have SIBO and you eat eggs, that might be causing a major problem for you and might be increasing your risk of cardiovascular disease. And that may be part of the reason, at least, why these egg studies are so inconclusive. So if we know that 3 out of every 4 people who have any type of gastrointestinal symptoms have a small bowel infection, that would explain a lot in terms of whether or not you eating eggs might increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. We know that eggs are not dangerous. We know that nature doesn't really create foods for broad consumption that are toxic, right? Nature does produce toxins. It produces arsenic, for example. And of course, if you consume arsenic in large amounts, that's toxic. You would die. Nature does have toxins within itself. Snake venom, for example, is toxic. But that's used as a protective and defensive mechanism, not as a food. So why would nature produce a toxic food? That doesn't really make a lot of sense. So when we begin to suspect that a food is toxic, we have to look at what may have we done to this food to have made it toxic. Unfortunately, in our conventional model, we assume it's the food, but in the integrative medical model, we assume it's what we've done to the food. So soy is a good example. You know, soy is eaten in Asia by the truckloads, and Asia does not have the cancer risk that we do here in the United States. And yet we demonize soy here in the United States and say that it increases the risk of cancer. Well, is it the soy or is it the genetic modification of the soy? Right? I would put my money on the genetic modification of the soy that made it toxic. Because again, soy is consumed in large amounts in Asia, and they have a fraction of our risk of cancer, in particular breast cancer. Now, if you take an Asian person and you take them out of Asia and you bring them here to the United States, over time they will develop that increased risk of breast cancer that we have here. And that is because they will begin to consume our toxic U.S. food, including soy. So we have to look very critically at what are we doing to our food sources that are making them toxic. And when we see these inconclusive studies, one minute eggs are safe, the next minute they're not, we have to question, is it really the egg or is it what we've done to the egg? And so let's look at eggs for a minute and see, what did we do to eggs? Where are eggs coming from? So what do we know about eggs? You know, we know that you can buy eggs organic or you can buy them non-organic. We know that you can buy eggs pasture-raised and cage-free, or you can buy them from caged hens. So what do we know about eggs? Eggs contain a lot of lutein and zeaxanthin, which is important for the health of our eyes and vision. I talked about choline just a few minutes ago, which is an amino acid that's critical as what we call brain food. It is heavily used in our nervous system. So Alzheimer's dementia, for example, is due to the inability of our nerves to make acetylcholine. Eggs are a natural source of vitamin B12. And this is really important. Eggs are an important source of amino acids tryptophan and tyrosine. Now, these are antioxidants that prevent coronary artery disease as well as cancer. And this is very well researched in the literature. So eggs prevent cancer and they prevent heart attacks. So how is the Journal of the American Medical Association telling us that it increases the risk of heart attacks? Again, we have to look at what are we doing to our eggs? What are we doing to the hens that are being asked to lay these eggs? So when we look at that, we begin to see and we begin to unravel this mystery about eggs. So is there a difference between free-roaming, cage-free eggs versus caged eggs? In other words, whether the hens are allowed to roam free or whether they're caged. Is there a difference? And it turns out there actually is. Eggs laid by hens that are fed organic feed, their natural source of food, and that are allowed to roam free are actually much higher in nutrition than hens that are caged. Again, these are shown in nutrition studies. So these are things that we can all go see for ourselves. These are not things that are mysterious. So organic pasteurized eggs, or pastured eggs, I'm sorry, not pasteurized, but pastured. In other words, they're allowed to roam free in pastures. So they're raised on certified organic feed. They're not given a vegetarian diet because hens are not vegetarians, right? They're not given what are called nutrient-enhanced eggs because those are unhealthy. Most of the time when things are enhanced or fortified, they're synthetic and artificial, and that ruins an otherwise perfectly good food. Organic pastured eggs are not enhanced with nutrients. So basically, they make their nutrients all by themselves because they're fed properly and they're raised properly. And so they have two-thirds more vitamin A, twice as much omega-3, three times more vitamin E, and seven times more beta-carotene than regular eggs. They're not exposed to pesticides. They're not exposed to antibiotics. They're not exposed to synthetic hormones. And they're not fed genetically modified soy or corn. And this is why they're healthier overall. And if you eat a healthier egg, you'll be healthier. If you eat a sick egg, you'll be sick. So basically, these are just a few tips as to why are these studies so confusing? Why can't we get a straight answer out of anyone about eggs or cholesterol? It's because there are too many confounding factors. So again, when you go and you ask someone to remember what they ate last month or last year, did you ask them if it was all organic? Did you ask them if they have organic pasture-raised eggs? Or did you just ask about eggs in general? Did you ask them if they put a bunch of cheese, artificial cheese, on their eggs? Or what they cooked their eggs in? Or what they had with their eggs? And the answer is no, they didn't. They didn't control for any of those things. They didn't control for how much sugar those people consumed. And so it's no wonder that they come up with confusing results. So when you buy your eggs, if you want to avoid all this confusion and if you want to avoid an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, please make sure that you're getting organic, pasture-raised, cage-free eggs. Very, very important. We have the same issue with aspirin that we'll talk about today a little bit later on our show as well. So again, what is the difference? What makes a good egg a good egg? So when we pasteurize our eggs, what happens to them? They're heated. Basically, to just before they would become solid. And that's to destroy harmful pathogens. While that makes sense on the surface, what happens is it changes the quality of the eggs. What about vegetarian eggs? A lot of people are buying vegetarian eggs because they assume they'll be healthier. So what's a vegetarian egg? It's an egg laid by a hen that was fed a vegetarian diet. Again, on the surface, that doesn't sound so bad, but until we figure out that chickens are not vegetarians, and if they're not allowed to eat what they would eat in the wild, they can't make good eggs. It's just that simple. And so vegetarian eggs are not as healthy as organic pasture-raised eggs. So when we look at pasture-raised versus caged hens, what possible difference could that make? What's the big deal if they're in a cage or if they're free, right? Well, we know about energy of food. You know, we know about energy in particular, and we are energetic beings. We're basically bags of water with currents running through us. That is, and what makes us special is our consciousness or our spirit that inhabits this bag of water with the current going through it. And this is all energy. It's all about the exchange of energy. And even things we think are solid, as we've learned, are not solid at all. They're just really dense energies. And when you try and put your hand through a wall, for example, your hand will be repelled by the wall. Not because you're solid and the wall is solid, but because there are forces that will repel you from the wall. Because the wall is really dense and so is your hand. And so what science is telling us is what ancient traditions have told us for thousands and thousands of years, and that is that we are energy beings. We're beings of light. And so if you cage an animal and take it out of its natural habitat, and you force it to eat a diet that is not its own, and you force it to be in a very crowded, unsanitary, inhumane place, the energy of that animal is going to shift, and so will the food that that animal produces, just like us. If we were to be caged, you know, even if we had other people with us, but if we were in an overcrowded situation, you know, our energy would very quickly shift. Our behavior would be altered. Our thinking would be altered. And therefore, our frequency and our vibration would be altered. And so if we do that to animals, the vibration and the frequency of these animals will undoubtedly be altered, as will the things that they produce. So because we rely on hens to produce eggs for us to consume, these eggs will also have an altered frequency and energy. And when we consume that egg, it will alter our frequency and energy. So as we know from ancient traditions, whether we look at the Egyptians, the Sumerians, whether we look at the Asians, the ancient Chinese, in India, whether it be the American Indians or the Asian Indians, they all say the same thing, and that is that we are all connected. And we are inseparable from each other and our environment. And so if we consume something that is of a low vibration, it lowers our own vibration, and it creates densities in the body that may produce disease. And so it becomes a little bit easier for us to see why the Journal of the American Medical Association will associate an increased risk of heart disease with consumption of non-organic eggs. It's very likely that the vast majority of the 30,000 people that were surveyed about their diet were not eating organic eggs. Why? Because, well, number one, they're a little bit more expensive in price. I always have to be careful when I say something's expensive, because what's expensive is a heart attack, not an egg. What's expensive is the loss of function after a heart attack or a stroke. What's expensive is not being able to enjoy life because you're paralyzed or because you don't have the capacity to be as active anymore. You know, heart disease and strokes are major, major catastrophic incidents that alter people's lives forever. So that's expensive, in my opinion, not an organic egg. So when we look at the price tag of something, we have to really look at it in its proper perspective. You know, what's expensive? Is it the billions and billions of dollars that we spend on, you know, the drugs that are used to keep people from dying when they have a heart attack, or the surgeries that they have to have, or the rehabilitation that they have, the ongoing medications they need to consume? And to say nothing of the quality of life that they lose, not being able to play with their children now or their grandchildren, not being able to exercise in the same way that they would want to, not being able to participate in the simplest of things that used to bring them joy. That, in my opinion, is way more expensive than buying a dozen organic pasture-raised eggs. So I would encourage everyone to reexamine. You know, when you make your food choices, think of the long-term expense, not just the short-term expense. We're seeing over and over again, studies are clear in their confusion. the fact that it's confusing makes it clear. The fact that it's confusing, eat eggs 1 minute, don't eat eggs the next, gives us a very clear path, in fact. It helps us to question. It makes us question more. How are we selecting our food? How are we, how can we bring consumer demand to the table and force this change in a positive way? So when we come back, we'll talk about the aspirin study that came out this week, and I'll take your questions. Again, thanks for listening to Awakened Wellness with Milen Rehab MD. Please give us a call, area code 833-220-1200. We'll be right back.
What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness on Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe, MD. Tune in every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time with live shows on the first and third mornings when you can call in and ask Dr. Milen the questions that matter most to you. Dr. Milen is the medical director of the Riavay Institute of Integrative Medicine in Jupiter, Florida. For more information, visit riavayintegrativemedicine.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you in for this dynamic, forward-thinking show. If you're living with fear and stress in your life, there is an answer.
If you're ready for a better way, step through The Doorway.
The Doorway is a multimedia online course for transcending fear, transforming relationships, accessing inner guidance, and experiencing more inspiration and trust in your life.
To learn more about these online courses based on the teachings of A Course in Miracles and David Hoffmeister, go to acimcourses.com.
EDCIA is a U.S. nonprofit dedicated to the dream of ending childhood malnutrition for millions of children around the world. Through the manufacture of Plumpy Nut and other nutrient-rich, peanut-based, ready-to-use foods, EDCIA has already delivered life and hope to nearly 1 million children in over 26 developing countries. To find out how you can join EDCIA's dream of ending childhood malnutrition, please visit edciaglobal.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe, MD. I'm your host, Dr. Milen, and today we're exploring the extraordinary egg controversy, talking about why medical studies are so confusing. We're told to eat one thing 1 minute and told to stop eating it the next, just as you're about to put a bite of that delicious omelet in your mouth. Yeah, you get this crazy story on the news. So what are we supposed to do with all this data, this confusing data? Well, the answer is...
Hey, Dr. Milen, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You have a caller from the Boston area.
Oh, wonderful. Good morning.
Good morning. I thank you for talking about this controversial subject, and I thank you for mentioning the egg price, because they are more expensive, as high as $1.50 more than regular eggs. However, compared to a heart attack, $5 for eggs is pretty darn inexpensive.
Yes, it's a bargain, actually.
Yes. So people don't realize that, I mean, we do organic here, and everything seems to be $5 each. However, when you add it up and you compare it to not going to the doctors or not having a lot of the issues that many people experience, it's well worth it. So think about how, for the listeners, think about the cost of health care these days. And even if you're doing co-pays, it certainly is more than $5. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
That's a great.
So I want to ask you, you know how we're inundated with advertising on TV and radio and elsewhere? Why is it that the organic egg farmers aren't advertising? Is it all about the money, that they just don't have the funds to do so?
That's a fantastic question, Deborah. I can't speak to that directly. I mean, I would imagine that it's a matter of lobbying. They probably don't have the dollars that the regular dairy industry has. You know, these machines have been grinding for decades and decades, and it's hard to bring that gigantic machine to a halt and switch things around. What I have found, years and years ago, I went up to my local legislature here in Florida, up to Tallahassee. We were having a medical malpractice crisis again. And I just went up to talk to the legislators, and what I realized is they don't have time to look at these issues. So they rely on people knocking on their door and talking to them. They rely on the people that donate to their campaigns, which is, of course, extremely dangerous for the American public at large. What I realize is the issues are sometimes above what they're capable of understanding. They're not scientists. They're not doctors. You know, and so they have to rely on what they're told. And so the more money you have, the louder your voice. And that's what I've been finding. And so, you know, it's a gigantic machine that we're going up against. And so it's just a matter of this kind of grassroots effort, you know. It's staying on the ground. It's educating as much as possible until, you know, there's enough momentum where we can be on television doing commercials and you know, comparing head-to-head with this enormous machine that we're up against.
Right. Thank you for explaining that. And yeah, I guess it does go back to the monies, and they may just not have. But I wish that there was literature that was written for the consumer somewhere where people could read about it and make their own choices based on education. It's a shame because you think about, let's think about the soda industry that had their billionaires. I mean, has there been any studies on the effects of sugar and caramel color for someone that drinks it, you know, 4 or 5 cans of soda. Yeah. I mean, I just find it also amazing that there isn't any studies on those kinds of things, or even meds that have 10 different side effects that could kill you versus the disease that you actually have acquired. You must be frustrated at times being, you know, both integrative as well as functional doctor, that more hasn't been done faster, should I say.
Yeah, it's a definite source of you know, frustration. But not just for myself. I'm frustrated for my clients. You know, I see, you know, I have to sit here and parse through these studies to figure out why they don't make any sense. I can't even imagine, you know, someone who doesn't have my background trying to tackle these topics. It's impossible to know what to do without the guidance. You know, and there are some places, you know, Nature magazine, there are some nutrition magazines. The data is there. It's simply not in the places where the most people would hear about them. So the data on soda is clear. It's bad for you, you know, and there was just a recent study published that you're more likely to die if you drink soda, and these energy drinks as well. But you will not find them in the Journal of the American Medical Association. So it won't make the evening news. You won't find them in the New England Journal of Medicine. So it won't make the evening news. It'll just be in a tiny little corner in Nature magazine and nobody will be talking about it. But the data is there. It's, in fact, it's overwhelming. And if someone did have the resources to sit there and compile all of this data and put it in one place, now we'd have a conversation, you know.
Yes.
But it's just a matter of time.
Yes, time.
Yes.
And I heard on an earlier show that you spoke, and I heard it elsewhere as well, that for the first time in America, the decline in the last 3 years with the expectancy of the human being. And that hasn't happened in 100 years where we're usually going ahead, but it's actually going backwards. And in my mind, it all equates to nutrition and what's been happening in the last 50 years or more. Does it surprise you at all?
Unfortunately not. You know, this is how species go extinct. You know, species go extinct when the environment changes faster than the species can evolve. And so we're very complex. Human beings are extremely complex. We're not like viruses and bacteria, or even the moth. You know, we're extremely difficult to, it's extremely difficult to change our genetic makeup. And so when we look at the 80,000 chemicals in our environment that, of course, naturally make its way, make their way into our water and our soil, which then makes its, makes their way into our food, you know, it's easy to see why we're getting sick in these astounding numbers, to the point where our life expectancy is declining and to the point where our children are not expected to live as long as we do. It's insane. And so you have to create a bubble around yourself and your family with this information, so that what you're consuming is safe, you know, your home is safe, with the understanding that you're not going to control for everything, but if you can control for at least a substantial portion, you'll be okay. But again, trying to figure this data out on your own is nearly impossible. So, you know, getting to someone who's board certified and whose one and only purpose in life is to figure it out for you is important. You know, and unfortunately, we just don't have the same machinery that what the industries who have driven us to this point have at their disposal.
Well, I think the power is in the consumer. If they stop buying some of these products, then the larger companies are forced to create more kinder products for the body. And I think that's the direction we're going. I know that's the direction we're going, and I just trust it will happen sooner than later.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, it's going at a pretty brisk pace right now. You know, we see more and more companies trying to distinguish themselves as more natural and organic. And again, we have to take all that with a grain of salt and look at the labels still, because companies are just, you know, looking at what's going to make them more money. They're not looking at our health. Their calculation is, oh, wait, people want things they think are healthier. You know, and so if they can make us think they're healthier, they're happy with that. But we really have to ask our the question of, is it healthier? You know, the egg industry touts that it's healthy all day long, but it's clearly not, because we wouldn't be having these inconsistent studies if eggs were really healthy. But the reason they're not healthy is because of how the hens are raised.
Exactly.
And what they're fed. So if they can make us think something is healthy, they'll take that shortcut and they'll label it natural, they'll label it all these things, but then we have to take a critical look and see. It has to pass the sniff test at the end of the day. But it's getting there. It's getting there. And the more astute the consumer becomes, the more educated the consumer becomes in reading labels and figuring out the toxins that are hidden, the more the industry will have to respond to that demand.
Right. Another point that or question I wanted to put out there is, with anything, we've learned that if you ate eggs every day, all day long, it's not going to be good for you. The only thing that really is good for you to drink water as much every day, but anything, whether it's a vegetable, whether it's a meat, whether it's a cheese, and I'm talking organic ways that may not have dairy in it, but still quality, good food, you can't eat just one item all day, every day, and expect to be healthy. There needs to be some diversity there. Would you agree with that?
Oh, without a doubt. That's a big premise in traditional Chinese medicine, is any restricted diet will become toxic eventually. So that's absolutely correct. You have to vary your diet. And in Chinese medicine, they talk about eating for the seasons. You know, so we eat warmer foods when it's colder outside. We eat cooler foods when it's warmer outside. We eat, you know, more moist foods when it's drier outside. So it's all about balance, ultimately. And so you can't stay balanced if you're eating exactly the same thing over and over. So absolutely a fantastic point to make. You got to vary your diet. Look at all the different sources of protein, the different sources of fats, the different sources of even carbohydrates, which aren't bad for you. We just have to know the different types that are good. Different types of vegetables, you know, very bright colored leafy veggies, and they should be varied, absolutely. And, of course, water, 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 water all day.
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for your knowledge, Dr. Millen, and keep doing such great work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, and with the help of, you know, people like you who inspire me, that it gets easier to do every day.
Well, good. Thank you. We're in gratitude.
Yes,
and everyone out there, listen and start reading labels.
Yes, okay. Read those labels. Sure.
Okay. Bye for now.
Thank you, Deborah. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Yes. We had another good question come in, during the break. And the question is, what do hens eat? Like, what are they supposed to eat? So if they're not vegetarians, what are they? And so if we were to think of hens in the wild, what would they be eating, right? They would be eating insects and grains and berries and things like that. And so, you know, this is what we want to mimic for them in the pastured environment. In the cage-free environment. So they're not vegans because they do eat insects. So it's important to keep their feed, you know, as natural as possible. Nature, it always goes back to nature. Nature always has these things figured out. So when we want to answer a question, we ask, you know, what did nature do? Not what would nature do, but what did it do? Because it did plant, you know, the path for us. And if we go back to nature, we always get the answer. So we're getting ready for our next commercial break, and thank you so much for those amazing questions and comments. Again, I look forward to hearing from all of you, so please give us a call at area code 833-220-1200. That's 833-220-1200. We're right here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. Thanks for listening to Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe, MD. We'll be right back.
What happens when we begin to realize that the 200-year experiment we've called the American healthcare system has failed? Learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness on Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe, MD. Tune in every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time with live shows on the first and third mornings when you can call in and ask Dr. Milen the questions that matter most to you. Dr. Milen is the medical director of the Riobe Institute of Integrative Medicine in Jupiter, Florida. For more information, visit riobeintegrativemedicine.com. Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you in for this dynamic, forward-thinking show.
Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Stroll through the garden, relax by the lake, or try a daily yoga or movement class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Welcome back to Awakened Wellness with Milen Riobe, MD, right here on Dream Vision 7 Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Milen, and today we were exploring the extraordinary egg controversy and why medical studies are so confusing. And I'd like to spend the last segment of our show today just touching on the latest data that came out just this past Sunday on aspirin. So again, we're asked to take a baby aspirin, we're asked to stop taking a baby aspirin, then we're asked to take another one, and then we're asked to stop again. So now Americans over the age of 70, unless they're at very high risk of having a stroke or a heart attack, are now being asked to stop their baby aspirin yet again. And so the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association released new guidelines just this past Sunday And what they found is the risk of gastrointestinal bleeding is too high in those over the age of 70 to warrant taking a baby aspirin for the sole purpose of preventing heart disease or stroke. Now, please bear in mind that this is only if you have not already had a heart attack or a stroke. So if you have a history of having had a heart attack or a stroke, they continue to recommend that you take the baby aspirin and take the risk, you know, of the possible gastrointestinal bleeding. But they took away the recommendation for the rest of the population. So unless you're at high risk, which means that you may have an excessive family history, if you're a cigarette smoker, obesity, if you have hypertension, if you have certain cardiovascular markers that place you at high risk, you are being asked to continue to take this baby aspirin. But if you are 70 years or older without an increased risk, you're being asked not to take low-dose aspirin. The risk of bleeding from taking a baby aspirin is quite high. These were fatal incidents of bleeding. So these were not minor bleeds that people were having. So the journal Lancet published a study in 2018 looking at 12,500 people, and they saw that aspirin did not lower the risk of a stroke or a heart attack over a five-year period when compared to a placebo. But it did confer twice the risk of having a gastrointestinal bleed. A study published in 2017 by the same journal, Lancet, showed that those over the age of 75 had a very serious serious risk of gastrointestinal bleeding that could be fatal or land them in the hospital. So the recommendation is to have a conversation with your physician. Stopping aspirin suddenly also increases the risk of heart attacks and strokes. So there was a Swedish study back in 2017 that showed if you stopped your aspirin suddenly, you had a 37% increased risk of stroke or a heart attack. So don't just stop your aspirin out of the blue. Please have a conversation with your physician so that you can assess your cardiovascular risk. And if you're deemed to be not at risk enough to warrant taking that baby aspirin, you want to wean yourself off slowly under the guidance of your physician. So what's the deal with aspirin? You know, why is it safe to take 1 minute and not safe to take the next? Well, this goes back to what is aspirin. So if we look at aspirin, it is what's called acetylsalicylic acid, so ASA. It was basically made in a laboratory in 1853 by Charles von Gerhardt. So what is aspirin derived from? It's derived from white willow bark, which is very ancient. So we have history books that tell us, going back as far as 4000 BC, it was used by the Assyrians and the Sumerians. They used white willow bark, or Salix alba. They actually use the leaves of the white willow. And even 4,000 years ago, it was known to be a pain reliever. It was known to lower fevers. And this was the leaf of the willow bark. But for some reason, it was synthesized in 1853. So if you look at the chemical structure of white willow or Salix alba, its active ingredient is salicin, which gets converted in the body to salicylic acid. And it has a particular chemical structure, so you can actually go look up the chemical structure of salicin or salicylic acid. And if you were to do that, you would see that it does not have the same chemical structure as aspirin. It's a different chemical structure. And so, again, nature had this all figured out. If we would stay consistent with what nature created, we would find ourselves in a lot less confusion than we are. So the chemical structure is different. What does that mean? It means that it's going to be processed differently in the body than if you were to consume the natural white willow leaf or bark. And also, if you look at ancient texts, they didn't use it every day. They used it as needed. You know, so if someone had a fever, they gave them white willow leaves. If they had pain, they gave them white willow leaves, but they didn't give it to them every single day. Again, this is a premise, and our caller Deborah pointed this out very astutely. Can't take the same thing over and over again every single day. It's going to cause a problem. And this is well known in traditional Chinese medicine as well. So don't have a lot of time to discuss this with you guys today. Maybe I'll discuss it on the next show. There's so much controversy to parse out. And again, I'm so blessed and honored to have been with you here today. That's all the time we have for our show. So please tune in next time. We'll be back live in two Tuesdays from today. Thank you so much again for your calls. We're here live two Tuesdays from today on Dream Vision 7 Radio. Thanks for listening to Awakened Wellness with Milen Rehoboam D. Until next time, many, many blessings.
Join us next time on Awakened Wellness with Milen Rehoboam MD to learn how spirituality, ancient traditions, and cutting-edge science are merging to create a new paradigm of wellness. Awakened Wellness airs every Tuesday at 11 a.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time with live shows on the first and third Tuesday mornings of each month. Meanwhile, you can join our Facebook page at facebook.com/AwakenedWellness8 and let us know what you'd like to discuss on future episodes. Dr. Milen is the medical director of the Rehoboam Institute of Integrative Medicine in Jupiter, Florida. For more information, visit rehoboamintegrativemedicine.com. This show is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.